Hello, this is Radio's Uncle Sidney. When I'm out and about, folks comes up to me and says, "You should be ashamed." But when they calms down, they says how much they loves WBAI. That's WBAI New York and WBAI.org. Back in the day, we had commentaries by Malcolm X, Ayn Rand, Abby Hoffman, and William F. Buckley Jr. Imagine them folks in the same room at the same time. Nowadays, we've got Bob Fass, the founder of the feast. Amy Goodman, you know her, we got her. Michio Kaku, the smartest guy in the world. Shows that helps you not to get evicted. Top-of-the-line news and interviews. Insane artists and musicians. Well, okay, okay, we went nuts for a while back there. But now we're okay. We're like your crackhead cousin that's making good. So we know you're pulling for us. Go, go, run right now to WBAI.org and look around. See where we've gone. You can even subscribe online. Believe me, you'll be glad you did. Stay tuned.
It should be about 5 a.m., and you're listening to All
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its 5-year mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no
90-year-old fart
has gone before.
Radio, WBAI, New York.
No, I know we're not in Kansas.
Good goddamn morning. How the hell are you? This is WBAI New York. The program is back of the book. My name is R. Paul Martin. She is Radio's Pickles of the North. Good morning, my dear.
Good morning to you, my dear, and a hearty hello to our dear 19 listeners wherever they may be.
And we have a web page for this program, and you can find it by going up to my website at glib.com, glib.com, and you can look around at things up there. When you get there, you'll see a blue navigation frame on the left-hand side of your screen. It'll say latest back of the book program links. That is what you click on, and you get to the web page for this program. The WBAI website and the archives seem to be functioning. This is our 62nd pandemic episode of Back of the Book. It's pre-recorded. This program was recorded on Friday for airing on Saturday morning. If things have happened between then and when you're hearing this program, we won't be referencing them on this program. A recorded program is not as up-to-date as a live program. But this is what we have to do these days. And the top story in the world is... we are still holding at 115 followers on Twitter. That's the highest we've ever gotten in terms of followers on Twitter. And of course, everyone is saying, ah, the world is just amazed at 115 followers. The next public WBAI local station board meeting is scheduled to be held on Wednesday, November 10th, 2021 at 7 p.m. on Zoom, even though Zoom compromises privacy and security. And yes, we've been talking about elections going on for some months now, and the WBAI election is over. Yes, all this election stuff has been going on, and you've been hearing carts and some people getting on the air and being able to say what they think and why you should vote for them and not those other guys and all of this stuff. And yeah, I still don't have an answer for why I was made by the National Election Supervisor to record a cart for myself because the staff can't campaign for ourselves on the air. But I had to make this cart. I had to spend time doing it, and it isn't even online. So, geez, at least it's not online where I could easily find it. I have a bunch of stuff written. You have to write stuff and make statements. And I did all of that and answered the questions. And it's all posted up on elections.pacifica.org. And yet nowhere in there is the cart that I had to make. You know, these people. Anyway. So the election is over for WBAI. For WPFW, our sister station in Washington, D.C., not so much. They didn't make quorum. See, there's a quorum here. And we know how many listeners each station has. And for the listener elections, they have to make 10% of the listeners have to vote. Otherwise, they don't meet quorum and it's not a valid election. For staff, it's a higher number. It's 25% because they figure we're going to be more connected to all of this. So staff has met it. In fact, for WBAI, listeners, 16.2%. Had to get 10, got 16.2. Staff, 33%. One-third of the staff have voted. Yeah, I figure it'll be 33 1/3% pretty soon because, we're talking here. You're hearing us on Saturday morning. As we speak right now, as we record this on Friday afternoon, the election is actually technically still going on because it goes on till midnight Friday night, and we're still recording. So it's hard to get my head around the fact that I can now talk about it. If I were doing this live on the air on Friday, I'd be doing a big violation. Doing it by recording on Saturday morning is not a problem. So, WBAI, well, it also lists how many people are in each category. WBAI has 6,287 listeners. That is very low. That's not so good. 1,019 have voted. And so that's 16.2%. For staff, there are 261 staff. 86 have voted, and that's where you get your 33% from. And again, probably a couple more will vote before midnight, and we'll probably get a full third of the WBAI staff voting. Anyway, voting ended last night at midnight, from your perspective. And I hope you all did your research, as I've been telling you to do for months, and not vote for the so-called Justice and Unity campaign slate. Yeah, those people are the ones who want to give WBAI away to a public access cable company in Manhattan. They keep saying it would be a, quote, partnership, unquote. Yeah, I mean, what kind of a partnership? This guy's going to pay all the bills and not put on the air what he wants if you get what you want? No, that makes no damn sense. In fact, if that were done, it's called a public service operating agreement. If that were done, it would be a takeover, not a partnership. And also think about the reality of it. If you're paying all these substantial bills, and again, it costs WBAI $120,000 a month just to be here, you're going to pay all that money and you're going to say, oh, and I'll just leave the programming exactly as it is. I don't think so. I mean, that's obvious. Anyway, so these people from the so-called Justice and Unity campaign claim that a contract could be written that would give Pacifica control over WBAI, that Pacifica would keep control over BAI despite the fact that everything would be being run and paid for by this Manhattan cable outfit. Well, that's make-believe. And besides the fact that there's the fact that nobody's going to want to pay for something and then not have any control over it, there are laws about these things. You can't just, you know, say, okay, that's what the law is, but we'll write a contract that does something completely different. No, you can't do that. Even I, without any law school time, because I've had to do, you know, contracts in real life, even I know that you cannot write a valid contract that goes against the law. That, you know, that voids the contract. Anyway, what we're seeing, though, from these folks is just campaign rhetoric, election campaign rhetoric. The rest of Pacifica would have to agree to give WBAI away like that. And that's a very unlikely thing to have happen. It would also require a referendum for all of Pacifica, just like the two we've had from bylaws hijackers over the past couple of years. And gee whiz, you know, all of Pacifica is going to say, yeah, let's give it away. And so this giveaway to the Manhattan cable outfit would never be agreed to. So the so-called Justice and Unity campaign would never really have to worry about the fantasy they push in their rhetoric being exposed as a pack of lies, because they know that Pacific is going to say no to it. But posturing is very effective in election campaigns. But anyway, the election is over. The 11th WBAI Local Station Board will hold its final meeting on November 10th, and the 12th WBAI Local Station Board will be seated on December 8th. And the so-called Justice and Unity campaign was pushing a last-minute trick during this past LSB meeting on Wednesday night. They wanted to bring up a motion that would have made a management evaluation committee that would evaluate management. And it would have to have made its entire process happen in about 6 weeks. Now, we had a management evaluation committee recently. We had it in 2019. And that ad hoc management evaluation committee, that thing took well over a year to get the job done. I think it might have been close to a year and a half, something like that. Well over a year to do it. And this motion to create this new committee said that there would be four members from the local station board on it. And also, any member of the public who showed up at the first meeting became a member of that committee. Oh, that's a smart way to put things together, especially since we've been seeing some rather wacky people coming around trying to get on committees and things lately. Oh, boy. Yeah, they would love this. They would love to be able to say, I'm evaluating the management of WBAI to, I don't know, whom they speak to. Anyway, this was all just more posturing, which is mostly what they're good at. So they wanted that motion to be higher up on the agenda so we could spend a lot of time on it. So as a result of their attempts to move it up on the agenda, they ate up so much time that we were never able to get to the motion at all. I'm sure that the 12th WBAI Local Station Board will do a management evaluation, and it won't have to be rushed in a few weeks. According to the Johns Hopkins website, COVID-19 cases in the whole world reached 239,926,774 on Friday, and global deaths reached 4,887,272. In America, the number of cases as of Friday was 44,825,194, and the death toll in America had reached 722,903. So, 11,035 people have died of COVID-19 in America since our last program 1 week ago. That's slightly down from the previous rate for the previous week, and it continues a trend of the death numbers from COVID-19 in America trending down, although they're much higher than they'd been only a couple of months ago. They're like 10 times higher than they had been two or three months ago, something like that. The unvaccinated people are still supplying the victims of almost all of the deaths. ICU beds in some places are beyond a critical level. One place off in the Midwest, has their ICU at 175% capacity. And in some places, of course, you've got one hospital for hundreds of miles around. And so, you know, all those rural people who say, yeah, we don't have to do this because we're rural. We won't catch it. Well, they're showing up at the hospital needing to be put face down with a respirator on them. And, you know, they keep showing up because that's the only place they can go or they're going to die. And so, yeah, 175% capacity, and they're not going to be able to, they're going to be like the other intensive care units in places like that that are saying, sorry, you can't come in here. We're full. So clearly, this can't keep going on, at least in those places. By the time this program airs on Saturday morning, all of those figures will, of course, be higher. And this was all mostly preventable. A pandemic that did not have to happen in the 21st century when we have these tremendous medical advances. But it's here. And anti-vaxxer cuckoos are making the news. An Ohio fifth grader was the youngest pro-mask person at a school board meeting in Cuyahoga Falls, Ohio this week. And she spoke up to the anti-maskers who tried to heckle her. Her name is Kaylin Park. She's 10. And she was at the meeting to support the district's mask mandate. And obviously, her interest in the school stuff is that she's going to the school. And so they were going to discuss the mask mandate. And there were opponents there protesting its recent extension until at least October 29th. And yeah, in Ohio, it's one of those places where they've got a lot. And she says, quote, it is super weird to be here because adults don't think that their children should wear masks. A lot of you guys are adults. You guys should be able to know that masks save lives, unquote. So the kid gets it. And the anti-maskers were talking over her, of course. And then the kid, Kaylin Park, says, quote, please be quiet. It's inappropriate that you guys can't stay quiet. She reminded opponents that wearing a mask would be, quote, for your safety, like kindness. She said, quote, my teacher tells me when you do something for other people, they can do it back. Wear a mask for them and they'll wear it back. You're showing kindness. So, you know, this kid is telling them, hey, come on. Let me at least speak here, you know? And, oh, man, it just shows, you know, we did a segment called People Stink several shows ago. I think we should probably do another one soon. Maybe these anti-maskers would be on it. I mean, who imagines that a mask wouldn't work? I mean, would these people want to go have surgery done on themselves and have the doctors and nurses just with their faces hanging out with no masks? Would that be okay with them? I bet you it wouldn't be.
These are the kind of people who think there is no pandemic. The virus is not that bad. You get it and then you're immune to it. No, so what if it spreads to kids? You know, they have robust immune systems, but it's not that bad to begin with anyway, so it doesn't matter. These are the folks, and I think there's approximately 65 million of them, so it's down, you know, from the high of 80 million, which is good, who are just bound and determined not to do anything to help us get out of this situation. In fact, they're doing all they can to make it worse.
Yeah, I guess they like it worse. Maybe it gives them a sense of power that, oh, I'm helping to kill all these other people. Maybe that's the thought. I don't know. It's sick either way. Anyway, in another thing regarding another 10-year-old, a woman in Chesapeake, Virginia, whose 10-year-old daughter had just died of COVID-19, spoke out against misinformation during a school board meeting recently, and she did this a day after burying her child. Nicole Sperry, who said she was there, quote, not only as a teacher at Chesapeake Public Schools, but also as a product of Chesapeake Public Schools, unquote, said that her daughter, who until very recently was a healthy little girl of 10, had died just 5 days after developing symptoms for COVID-19. And Mrs. Sperry told the meeting, quote, "My message for you and all that are listening is that COVID is not over. No matter what people who have been standing up here have said, on September 27th, during the last meeting, there were parents or concerned citizens that voiced misinformation to you. They said that COVID was basically over and that healthy people do not die," unquote. And she said that when she heard that, she was sitting next to her daughter's deathbed. And then she said, quote, "Children are getting COVID, and they're getting it at schools. We need to ensure that all protocols that you as a school board are saying that we do are being done. I hate wearing a mask, but I do it because I do not want my kiddos that I teach to get sick," unquote, she said. Yeah, she's a teacher. She concluded with, quote, "Now, more than ever, we need to do everything that we can to protect our children," unquote. On a somewhat lighter side of the pandemic and death and misery, Ozzy Osbourne is thanking Satan for not getting sick with COVID-19. He said, quote, "My wife had the virus, my daughter had the virus, and I never got it. Being a devil worshiper does have its good points," unquote.
Brother.
Well, you know, we've got the Sky Pilots and the True Believers talking about dogs spelled backwards will save them and all of this. Well, you know, the devil is saving Ozzy Osbourne. So what God do you really want? And we have all these True Believers and, you know, the pastors who say, don't do this. And we've got the newspaper stories about them dying of COVID-19. And, you know, a lot of them lose their faith of it ain't going to get me as they're croaking. And they say, get vaccinated. They've been anti-vaxxers up until that point. And they're saying, you should all get vaccinated. And then they die. But Ozzy Osbourne worships some sort of devil, whatever the hell that is. And he's alive. So there we go. All right. A sort of counterpoint to the more mainstream wackiness. And right about now, I think it's time for us to do a station break. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, broadcasting from a transmitter and antenna atop 4 Times Square, going through a new studio somewhere in downtown Brooklyn and originating in our living room somewhere else in Brooklyn. The program is Back of the Book. My name is R. Paul Martin. She is Radio's Pickles of the North. And you can find out more by going up to my website at glib.com, glib.com. You can also go to the official website of this radio station at wbai.org. And, of course, all sorts of things can kill us. And they do. And I read a story. 4 members of the same family were killed in a winemaking accident at their vineyard in Paola, an Italian village. So in Paola, Italy, these people are making wine. It's a thing I guess they do frequently in Italy because they got the grapes. They have a culture of make your own wine, so they make it. Well, these people had a little accident, and they were making the wine, and one of them went to check on the wine, which was fermenting in the basement. And so the one family member went down, and he was down there, and after a while he didn't come back, and everybody else got worried about him. So 3 more relatives went down to help him out. All 4 family members died of carbon dioxide poisoning. Carbon dioxide, I've read in the past, is the most underestimated deadly poison there is, because people think carbon dioxide is harmless. It's got to be harmless. After all, we exhale it, don't we? I mean, every time you exhale, there's carbon dioxide coming out of you. You take oxygen in and you breathe out carbon dioxide. It is not nearly that simple, but it happens. And so people think it's harmless. Well, no. Obviously, we know that if you choke somebody and they can't breathe, it'll kill them. Because they'll die of asphyxiation, not being able to get the oxygen in. On the other hand, you could say, well, we're out here in the open air, and it's okay, and it's nothing. And although they weren't in the open air, they were in a closed basement, which is not recommended for the way you should ferment grapes. And what happens is carbon dioxide is, you can't use it. You breathe it in, and it doesn't do a lot of good for you. What it can do is get you very excited. Yeah, it can get you very excited. You get apnea, which is a way they have of testing to see if somebody is still sort of there. If somebody has, like, brain damage and it's severe and they've got them on a machine, they will do an apnea test where they restrict their breathing and they see if there's any kind of reaction, certain kinds of reactions coming out of them. And if there isn't, it kind of means it's time to take them off the machines. And what happens is we need oxygen. And carbon dioxide will displace it. So these guys walked down into a basement. And, of course, by fermenting, you have microbes that are eating the grapes, the grape sugar, and whatever carbohydrates are in there with the grapes. And the microbes are doing that, and they're making alcohol, but they're also breathing. They're breathing in, I guess, oxygen, and they're exhaling carbon dioxide. They're producing carbon dioxide, which is also how you get champagne and stuff. That's how they discovered it. Long ago in France, the monks were making wine, and something went wrong, and it was all bubbly, and they said, hey, this ain't half bad. And it was because they didn't do it quite right, and the carbon dioxide stayed in solution and became bubbles. And it was, oh, hey, we could probably make a lot of money doing this. And they've been doing it ever since. But anyway, what happens with carbon dioxide is you can't see it, you can't smell it, you can't taste it. You cannot tell that you're surrounded by carbon dioxide unless I think you're really skilled. If you've been taught how to identify it, I think there could be a certain amount of burning, like a burning sensation a little bit, because you can make carbonic acid with a high enough concentration of CO2. But before that, it's still lethal. You know, I mean, carbon dioxide going into water forms an acid. It's kind of a weak acid, but if it's done, you can taste it. In fact, you do taste it on several things. When you're drinking a drink, it's too fast. But if you ever do anything that puts carbon dioxide on your tongue, you can feel a little bit of, geez, that's kind of stingy the way acid will do. And that would be a giveaway, but who the hell pays attention to that? Plus, it is amazingly fast acting. If you walk into a room full of carbon dioxide, you take 3 or 4 breaths, and all of a sudden, it's really working hard on you. The first thing it does is it makes it so you get really dopey. Your brain doesn't work, and you pass out. You go to sleep. And of course, there you are on the ground, and the CO2 is heavier than air, so it's even more concentrated on the ground where you are trying to breathe, and there's no oxygen, and you die. And so these guys walked into this room. They may not have known what was happening at all. And while they're saying, oh, let's get Luigi up here. Let's get, okay, go over here. Well, by the time they walked over to where he was in the floor, they had probably taken a minimum of 2 breaths. And then there's, oh, here he is. And now they've got 4 breaths. And now they're getting kind of stupid because your brain doesn't work. And you know, the rest is how that goes.
So were these people, Arpal, were they amateurs?
I assume they were amateurs.
So they just were doing this, you know, so they could make wine and have some wine.
Yeah.
That's terrible.
Yeah, it's Jeez. It's. I'm sure lots and lots of people in Italy know exactly how to do this. One person who was interviewed about it says, "No, you never do it in an unventilated space because this is exactly what happens every time. Is the carbon dioxide is made, so you got to get that the hell out of there if you're not doing the special process that makes a sparkling wine." And so I've known about carbon dioxide for some years. I was reading years ago when I was spending a lot of time in the main reading room of the New York Public Library on 42nd Street. I was reading various different books. One of them talked about an accident. And it also talked about how lethal carbon dioxide is without people realizing it. And this is an accident that occurred at the Brooklyn Navy Yard. I forget if it was during World War I or World War II. And they had a ship in dry dock. And a dry dock is basically this concrete hole in the ground. You know, because what they do is there's this, it's made out of concrete and it's got a lot of room in it and it's got steps on it. And what they do is they let the water in and they float a ship in and they seal it off and they take the water out. And as the water goes out, they prop up the ship on wooden planks and all to just keep it upright. And so then they work and they, you know, do stuff to the hull. And they do, that's how they build a ship too. And so they were doing the work and there were 41 men down in the dry dock working on the ship. Somebody had accidentally left an acetylene torch burning up on the top by the opening of the dry dock. And of course, even though it was heated up, it cooled down fast enough and the carbon dioxide settled down. And the deepest down was where those guys were at the bottom of the dry dock. And they all died. And, you know, so you're, holy hell. I mean, this is not a thing that was widely publicized that much because the Navy doesn't like to have people think about them that way. But anyway, so carbon dioxide is a deadly thing. And there are all sorts of things that get it. It doesn't have to be a pandemic. It can also be just an accident and not knowing that carbon dioxide is extremely lethal because nobody takes it seriously.
Oh, just another reason to keep the bedroom window open all year round.
Oh, I guess that's true.
Yes, and to have plants.
I don't know if they would mitigate it enough.
But... Well, that's true. You'd have to have a lot, but they do breathe out oxygen and breathe in. In come the witch's dead. Witch, oh witch, the wicked witch. In come the wicked witch's dead.
In some news of Ding Dong, Abul Hassan Bani Sadr, Iran's first president after the 1979 revolution, has died. And, oh, this is one of the bad people. And, yeah, you know, the Ayatollah Khomeini and his pals took over in 1979. And pretty soon thereafter, I was in the Gay Activist Alliance at the time, and it was 1979. I guess it was it summer or autumn? I forget. Sometime in 1979. And there was a front page picture and story in the New York Times after these creeps had been in power for some months. And it showed people being executed. And we looked at this and we said, those look like kids. And the story was they were executing homosexuals. This is what they did. And of course, as the Gay Activist Alliance, we were quite furious about this. And Abul Hassan Bani Sadr seems to have not had a big problem with that. He was one of the main people that really enabled the Ayatollah Khomeini to come back to Iran and take over and changed history. So, yeah, Bani Sadr helped to change history in a bad way. And so, yeah, we're gonna say ding dong, that witch is dead, and good grief. I mean, the Abul Hasan Bani Sadr witch. God, what a creep. And he got away with it. And eventually, they started turning on him because he was just a scumbag. He wasn't the total religious fanatic these other creeps were. And they were going to kill him, too. And he said, I better get out of here. And it was another guy, Sadak Gotspada, who was he and Bani Sadr were, you know, the two big guys, and Gotspada was always making these speeches and blah, blah, blah against America. And, of course, we seized the American embassy and took them all hostage. America can do nothing to us. Well, you know, unfortunately, we had Carter with his lack of certain things in there at that time. We should have, you know, it has been said, what Carter should have done was said, oh, look at that. Okay, well, I guess you've broken off diplomatic relations with the United States. You have our people. Cough them up in 72 hours or we're going to come and kill you. And that would have been a good idea. Would have saved a lot of crap in the world. But that didn't happen. And so now we still have these same religious fanatics running Iran and trying to make atomic bombs. And killing Americans. Somebody got to do something about that bunch of creeps. Anyway, so yeah, Gotspada, I remember, he didn't get out in time. He was doing all their stuff, and then they eventually said, you're not holy enough. So they murdered him, too. It's just an amazing thing that this sort of stuff goes on. And so yeah, Bani Sadr, fooey on him. Let's, you know, we'll find his grave and make a deposit, I suppose. In come the witch's dead. Witch, oh witch, the wicked witch. In come the wicked witch is dead. When it comes to sleeping then, stop your eyes, get out of bed. And we opened up the program with a little something about Captain Kirk. Yes, William Shatner, who was Captain Kirk on Star Trek. He went up into space. He got far enough up that so technically he got over 100 kilometers and therefore he was in space and for minutes. And, you know, and then that was it. And so, yeah, they sent him up there and he's all emotional about it. I don't know. I don't know what this means. You know, the guy who was talking about, you know, yeah, so we're going on our starship, and now he's actually going into space very slightly. I don't know. It sounds like there should be something there you can really say about it, but I don't think there is anything profound you can say about it at all. He was an actor, and certainly getting barely above the line that says it's outer space isn't really anything like being in a starship that goes to other stars and, you know, goes many, many light years away from the planet Earth. But, oh well, William Shatner got up there and did his thing.
Well, you know, he's 90 years old, so it's great that it didn't kill him.
You know, there's that, I suppose.
And he got to be weightless without the, you know, going on the vomit comet, which would have been extremely unpleasant because, you know, that's, they don't call it the vomit comet for nothing, you know, the plane that has to go up and down and yuck. But I think it's all right that he went, but, you know, it's just another rich person's, not him, because he's wealthy, you know, he's comfortably wealthy.
He's not a billionaire.
He's not a billionaire. It's just another, oh, rich people get to do these things. You know, they get to pay for Captain Kirk to go out into space.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh, well.
Feh, I say. We want real space exploration. And then at some point, yes, it would be great if it were made safe enough for the average person to live on the moon, maybe. I don't know if that's going to happen.
Or if that would even be a good idea. Well, we could talk about trying to live on the moon and dealing with things like coronal mass ejections.
Oh, that's true.
And the daily bombardment of the solar wind and radiation and how deep inside the moon you'd have to live if you wanted to spend real time there. I mean, the astronauts who went to the moon, they didn't spend a lot of time there. And if you have to go up there and you figure you're going to spend years there, you're going to suck up a hell of a lot of radiation.
What would happen with the Gateway project if that actually is made, which would be a station that is circling the moon?
They would have to have a hell of a lot of radiation. Shielding. They'd have to have a lot of radiation shielding. And, you know, yeah, they would have, it would have to be, basically, you'd have to have this big steel and lead ball that they'd live at the center of, I think. If they're going to be there for, you know, some length of time. And even with that, if there's a bad coronal mass ejection, they're in trouble. Human beings in outer space without the protection of a thick atmosphere, you know, we're very vulnerable.
Well, I think we're still going to keep going, though, because...
You and I aren't. Well, people are still going to go up, and we'll see what happens. But, you know, fantasies that look like old spaceships from 1950s comic books just ain't going to happen.
Well, that's true. On the other hand, we walked out of Africa. We didn't stay in Pinnacle Point. We went.
Yep.
And that's what we do. We go, go, go.
We took over the world.
So that's where we're going to go, go, go. Down into the depths of the ocean, up into the far reaches of the sky.
Thank you, Pickles of the North. And this is an annoying story. A court in Kuwait has sentenced a transgender woman to 2 years behind bars for, quote, misusing phone communication, unquote, by, quote, imitating the opposite sex, unquote. Maha Al-Mutairi, who also received a fine of 1,000 Kuwaiti dollars, which amounts to over $3,300 American, was sentenced on October 3rd, according to the Human Rights Watch. And basically it's a transgendered woman and says, I'm female, I'm a woman. And they, no First Amendment in Kuwait, folks. So they went and they arrested her, and she's been abused terribly by the government and by the guards in prison and all. And Jesus, you know, what a backward place. And we have things to do with them. Really. I mean, at some point, you have to say, yeah, you want to stay on good terms with certain people, but at some point, they need to start thinking of staying on good terms with us. And maybe it's time to say, just because you're a bunch of homophobic scumbags doesn't mean you have to keep acting it out. You know, you can think your homophobic thoughts and transphobic thoughts, but don't act them out on people, or we're not going to like you anymore. Well, we haven't done any mail in a while, and so I think what we're going to do at this point in time is we're going to bear it all and read a little bit of your mail. happening is we've got some mail, and it is mostly old, but we're going to go through it. It's not going to be every bit of mail that we've gotten. We are not going to read mail from trolls and people who yell at us, so you can forget it trying to get on the air that way. We're going to read from people who relate to us in some way. And first, we have an email from Michael. And this is from earlier this year. And subject, remote transmission. And it says, "Hey, R. Paul, why can't you do the show live remotely? Isn't that technology available to you? Best, Michael." The answer is, unfortunately, no. It's not the technology. It's that there's nobody there. Between midnight and 6 a.m., there's nobody at BAI. Well, there's nobody working at BAI. And so, no, there would be nobody there to work the controls so we could do it live. And what happens for a lot of the people you hear on the air who are doing it live by remote is that they always have that situation where they show up and they're the talent and somebody runs the board and does all the technical stuff. Well, if you're an overnight radio program, you're supposed to do it all yourself, and I do it all myself. And the thing is, if there's nobody there to do the technical stuff, we just can't do it live. It's impossible. So we got to keep on recording. We are hoping that at some point next year, I don't think it's going to happen this year. At some point next year, we're going to be able to go in and do live programs again. That would be very good. Not only is it the COVID-19 thing, it's also we're going to, hope that things settle down in those overnights because, we're out there in the very wee hours of the morning. And, geez, besides the fact that you got all the crazy people shoving people onto subway tracks, you also have these motorcycle gangs. 4 o'clock in the morning, you get maybe 50 or 70 idiots on motorcycles and things like motorcycles making as much noise as they can rolling down the street. And, you got people like that out there. So we're going to wait a while longer before we go back to doing it live. And we really would like to do it live, but not yet. Okay. Next is an email from David. David, the subject is, "I think you'll like this article about the spring time change." You could tell this is from when we started Daylight Saving Time earlier this year. And David writes, "Hi, R. Paul. I just read this interesting article from The Guardian about this weekend's upcoming clock change. I thought you might like to read it and perhaps even talk about it on air. I've never understood the whole concept of daylight savings time, because if there were a time when we should really save daylight, it should be in the winter, right? But no, we save it during the summer when there's naturally more daylight than in the winter. What's up with that? Care to explain it?" Well, I don't know about explaining it, but I can say how it happens. First of all, the idea has been that daylight saving time, it's not savings, by the way, it's saving time. Daylight saving time is done to promote efficiency. It was done years and years ago to promote efficiency because it made it so that people were more active in the daylight when it was easier to do things. And otherwise, you kind of waste hours in the summertime because the sun comes up at 5 o'clock in the morning, or well before then, comes up before five sometimes, and depending on where you are, well before five. And so the sun comes up early and you're wasting hours of daylight, and then you no good. So people said, let's save that daylight, and that's where the name comes from. And so it's saving daylight, and that's why the hour gets pushed. And some people have proposed pushing more than an hour, although people already have enough problems with doing 1 hour, that way. We change it, then we go back. And also, it's not just in terms of the time when it's light. It's also political. For instance, during the 1973 oil crisis, the United States changed how it did daylight saving time. And that was in order to make it so that We had more daylight to be in, so we were using the lights less, and we saved a bit of electricity and therefore oil. And so that's the basic idea about it, is to be more efficient with that really good amount of sunlight in the summer. And then later on, when it starts getting darker, as it is now, you know, when you have more night dark than daylight, it doesn't work out so well anymore. And so they go back to the other way, and we stay there until March again. And again, the exact time of it has fluctuated for political reasons. And at one point, I think it was in 73, 74, we stayed on it. We didn't come off it. And a part of this also is that the way the daylight changes over the year is not uniform. There's something called the equation of time that shows how this works. But basically, in April, the days start getting longer at an accelerated rate. So in April, you're getting more and more sunlight, and you get more sunlight after that. It's longer times of sunlight, but during April, it's really accelerating. And during October, it's accelerating the other way. So you lose a lot of time, a lot of daylight in October. You gain a lot of daylight in April, you lose a lot in October. And that's a part of why we have the current system of where March and November is when we do it. They want to squeeze out a couple of weeks on either end of that for greater efficiency. And I know some people hate it. I really like the fact that we have daylight saving time, because I really, really prefer when the sun sets after 7 p.m., which I think everybody knows by now. So that's what's happening with that. And again, a lot of it's political. And finally, we have an email from Fred. And Fred writes, "Just wondering, why does your upload to WBAI occupy 600 megabytes when the download takes up only about 30 megabytes?" And this was in relation to me mentioning, you know, some of the mechanics of how we get this radio program in there. Basically, what happens is we upload a much higher quality audio file to WBAI. This radio program is recorded at CD quality. We're recording at a sample rate of 44,000 samples per second. Basically, the sound comes in and is converted to digital 44,000 times per second. And we're using 16-bit audio, which is, I'm not going to explain it, but it's 16-bit. And that's the quality of a CD. Now, you know, listening to a CD, you're hearing really good quality. You can hear like orchestras and it's good, although some people disagree, and all of that. And some people say that's overkill for voice, such as what we're doing. But we like to make the highest quality audio we can, and this is what we do. And so that makes basically a file that is about 10 megabytes per minute. And so at the end of 60 minutes, you have about 600 megabytes, a bit more. And so we don't do quite 60 minutes, but we do just under 60 minutes. And so we produce this 600 or so megabyte file, very high quality, so that when you hear it going out over the air, it's the same quality as somebody playing a pressed CD of something over the air. What happens is you have what's called the audio chain and the transmitter chain. The transmitter chain is what we send to the transmitter that you can hear. The audio train is a part of that transmitter train, and it's just the audio you hear that's processed by the machinery in WBAI, and then that is what's sent out over the wires in the transmitter chain. Oh, dear. And so, when they get that, WBAI, for whatever reason, wants a certain size of file. They don't want the files to be big. In fact, people complain sometimes that my files are bigger than they wish they would be. Eh. And so what happens is WBAI takes the .WAV, the WAV file, that CD quality, and while it's being played, it's being basically stored, recorded as an MP3 file. And it's much lower quality. That's the deal. It doesn't affect it tremendously, I guess, because it's talk. On the other hand, we have had listeners complimenting us on sounding better than certain of the other radio programs on this radio station. And that's going to be because we're doing the highest quality audio file we can do. And that's what the answer to that is. Thank you for asking, Fred. I think that's been it for Back of the Book. Okay, thanks a hell of a lot for listening. We'll be back here 1 week from now. And coming up next is
Ralph Nader Radio Hour, and at 7, Hour of the Wolf with Jim Freund,
who does all sorts of science fiction stuff on his program. Thanks for listening. Look out the window, watch things get darker earlier. Oh, yeah, it's getting dark so early now. And try to survive it all and keep your mask on. And above all, remember what that thinking about Captain Kirk drifting around in outer space Dormouse said.
Winding your way down a Baker Street, light in your head and dead on your feet. Well, another crazy day. You'll drink the night away and forget about everything. This city desert makes you feel so cold. It's got so many people, but it's got no soul. And it's taking you so long to find out you were wrong. Just one more year and then you'll be happy, but you're